Blog Talk Radio.
Leaving us.
Come on, man. What kind of fucking question is that, man? I'm trying to get the fuck about this joint, bro.
Yeah, you'll be back. You niggas always are.
Hey, man. What the fuck is you hollering about, homes? You won't see me up in this motherfucker no more. I got big plans, nigga. Big plans.
Ghetto,
To EIE SOC Radio. I'm your host, Tony Mix, founder and president of Enough is Enough, Save Our Children. Welcome to tonight's broadcast. Along with me, I have my co-host, Sister Amianette. Let me say good evening to her also. Sister, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good evening. I'm here.
Oh, that's great, sis. How was your day today?
Excellent. Thank you. And yours?
I had a very good day. I kind of lost part of my voice here. I don't know what's going on. I think it's the weather.
Okay. All right. Well, I hope you're drinking some tea and honey.
Well, right now I just got a cold, a bottle of cold water. That ought to do it.
Okay.
You know, it's the weather. Allergy season,
mm-hmm.
you know how it goes. But
mm-hmm.
tonight, I did this last minute. I said, you know, they've been talking about this all week. It's a big topic, especially in urban communities and with black folk, the situation with mass incarceration.
Mm-hmm.
And the Obama administration is encouraging many nonviolent federal prisoners to apply for early release.
Mm-hmm.
And they're expecting thousands to take up on this offer. You know, it's an effort to deal with high costs and overcrowding in prisons.
Okay.
And saying also a matter of fairness. So on that, you know, I titled our show tonight, Pros and Cons of Clemency for Inmates Jailed for 10 Years for Nonviolent Drug Offenses. This is what we're going to be talking about tonight. Our call-in number is 424-258-9271. Press 1. I know you're in the queue. I'll bring you in on tonight's discussion. If you choose not to speak, do not press 1, but you still will be able to hear the show. Also, the chat room is open. Feel free to leave your comments. I'll try to read some of them over the air. give some shout outs. If you have any questions, you can also ask questions, and we'll try to do our best to answer them. Also, if you call in, please be aware of background noise, you know, kids, TV, radio, what have you, because we're taping, and I would like to have a clear taping. So if you could help me out with that, I really appreciate it. Again, our calling number is 424-258-9271. Press 1, I'll know you're in the queue. Also, if you're trying to get in the chat room and you can't, you might want to reload the page because I didn't open the chat room until just now, so you may not see it. Or if you cannot get in the chat room, what you may need to do is log on to the Blog Talk Radio site, and that's via Facebook or Twitter. Again, tonight we're talking about the pros and cons of clemency for inmates, jail for 10 years or better for nonviolent drug offenses. You know, what's your view on this? What's your experience? What's your opinion? There's no right or wrong answers here tonight. I just want to know what my listeners think about this. Do you think it has to do with fairness, or is it something to do with cutting down costs and overcrowding in the prisons? This is what we're talking about tonight, so feel free to chime in. I'm going to go to my co-host and get her view on this, and then I may give you a little something. But Sister Aminette, you know, what's your view on this? You know, there's been a lot of talk about mass incarceration, prisoners for profit, and now they're taking measures to encourage nonviolent felons to apply for early release. You know, what's your view on that?
Well, the thing is that I think it's the justice system is unfair. You know, I don't know if there'll ever be an equal balance in it. It wasn't designed that way. You know, there's always room for pardon. You know, I think the system, I don't know if it will ever benefit anybody. I don't think it's, you know, I don't know. I just don't think it was ever designed to benefit anybody. So, you know, like you said, there are pros and cons for clemency for the inmates that are jailed for 10 years for nonviolent drug offenses. I mean, this should be implemented. You know, it should be. And we know that especially black men get punished more harshly than other offenders do for lightweight crimes. We know that somebody that maybe does deals cocaine will get a lesser sentence than somebody that deals crack. And that it's not equal in terms of how punishment is delivered, how it is handed out. So, you know, this could be beneficial. This could be very, very, very beneficial. It's positive. You know, but what does Obama have to go through to actually make this happen? That's the question. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with it.
Well, Eric Holder is leading the charge on this. He has been for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's an effort to decrease the prison population and make room for those who really, how do I put this, really need to be there.
Mm-hmm,
you know, because for me, all right, you know, you've got a nonviolent drug offense and you've been doing time for 10 years or better.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, even being a nonviolent felon, you know, if you were, excuse me, if you were a major dealer of some sort,
mm-hmm,
and still were nonviolent, you know, I would kind of have to, I don't know, argue with that somewhat,
mm-hmm,
or maybe even disagree. You know, but if you're just a regular
right.
person that got busted, you know, you know, a little bit of, a couple ounces of weed or a pound, even a pound or two, you know, and you've done 10 years, I would say time served, perhaps parole, probation, whatever the case may be, you know. And also, I know a lot of these individuals, convicts, probably came from poor backgrounds, didn't have a real good legal representation, so they got hit with a lot of time, you know. So I know that plays a part in why they've been incarcerated so long, you know. So, you know, this can have, you know, it can have some pluses, and at the same time, I see a lot of minuses, you know, because I'm looking at, okay, talking about thousands of prisoners, that you're about to release into a society that the economy is bad, okay? Housing is bad. You know, what are you going to have for them when they get out is the question, you know, and what have they done since they've been incarcerated? What have they been doing? You know, have they improved mentally? Have they improved any kind of physical skills, job training? What have they learned since they've been away? Because if you're going to release them into society, okay, I really believe, you know, you're going to have something for them, some kind of program,
right?
Some kind of job, you know.
Right.
So you know, is there a plan besides letting them out? Because they got to have something to come home to. A lot of folks that are locked away, they don't have any family, you know, no one to have a home waiting for them. A lot are going to have to go into halfway houses and whatnot, you know.
Right.
Some may have to take menial jobs.
Right.
You know, so this, I see this is, you know, this, there's a lot to this. And then there's those that are going to get out and see there's nothing for them, and they're going to pick up where they left off.
Right. That's true. And then, you know, well, my thing is, my question is, will it ever be fair? Will it ever be fair? Ever? Was it designed to be fair in the first place? Who does it benefit? It's a money-making system.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
Mm-hmm.
Today we have prisons for prisoners for profit. We have corporate corrections. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Men of color have become a commodity on Wall Street. Okay,
mm-hmm.
to, yeah, because of corporate corrections. So a lot of these individuals are going to be coming out of state prisons, okay, which in time, there's not going to be any more state prisons. Corporate America is going to be running the prison system.
Right.
So, you know, I see it as there's a method to the madness. Now, as far as the fairness in the courtroom, it's about how much money you got. If you're poor, you're always asked to cop out to some kind of plea bargain. You don't take that. You go to trial. You blow trial. They'll give you the maximum sentence. And I'm quite sure a lot of these individuals with these nonviolent drug offenses, okay, some may have went to trial. Some may have went to trial.
Mm-hmm.
And lost at trial. You know, some may have been offered programs to complete, which they did not complete. So they were sent to prison to do the time. You know, I know there's, you know, these are the different cases that some of these folks, that men and women, have went through. You know, now you're saying let them out. Let them out, you know. Because we want to implement some sort of fairness, which that part I'm a little puzzled about. Where's the fairness at? You know, I really don't.
Right.
I don't see that. I don't see that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you're saying overcrowding and the high cost. The high cost of three hots in a cot.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It's a lot of pros and cons. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It may work, but I don't see it working. Not in the society we live in. First of all, we live in a violent society.
Right.
Economically.
Very violent. And it's one of the most violent countries, you know, in the Western Hemisphere.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And the economy is bad. So how are they going to support themselves? How are they going to live? How are they going to keep food on, you know, in their bellies, roof over their head? How is it, what do you have to offer them when they come home? Because we're talking about thousands across the nation who have been sitting in jail forever for a nonviolent drug offense. You know, a lot that were locked up were for cocaine, crack cocaine. Let me say that, crack cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yep.
You were getting big time for crack cocaine, but less time for powdered cocaine.
Exactly.
Now, you want to talk about the fairness. Now, let's take a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's take, I think the thing was crack was such a scourge, okay, and they were trying to defeat it, that if you got caught with it, you was going to get hit with the max, with whatever we could give you, okay? And I don't think that's fair. I don't, because you had a lot of individuals who were, they weren't drug dealers. They were drug addicts.
Right.
They were crack addicts.
Mm-hmm.
And they got maximum sentences for so small quantities of crack. Meanwhile, somebody get busted with some powder cocaine, much a bigger quantity, but they getting less of time.
Right.
So.
Yeah, true. Right. And the thing is, why is that?
Because of the system. Because of, see, I look at what was going on in the times that it was happening. Crack cocaine was a scourge. Okay? It wreaked havoc in urban communities, and then when it started going into suburban communities, okay, when the suburban kids started going up to the Bronx and buying up all the crack they could, emptying their mothers and fathers' bank accounts, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Suburban America said, oh, no, 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 no. Our children are going over there buying up all of that crack in the communities of color. We want y'all to do something, and we want y'all to do something now. And they did.
Exactly. Exactly.
And they did.
Right.
So, you know, there's a, you know, this is the system.
Mm-hmm.
This is the system. I wrote about this a long time ago. See, had crack stayed in the urban community like any other drug, it would not have been an issue. It would not have even been addressed the way that it was. But it reached suburban America. And suburban America said, no, y'all got to do something, and y'all got to do something now.
Exactly.
It's the same thing with gun violence. Gun violence persists because of where it's happening.
Right.
So if we're expecting government and law enforcement to take bigger measures than they're doing now, it's not going to happen because it's only affecting a certain part of America. That is the history in this country. That's what I've seen, others have seen. If someone disagrees with me, call the numbers 424-258-9271. Press 1. I know you're in the queue. You can give me your view, your opinion, your experience, and we can discuss this. But tonight we're talking about the pros and cons of clemency for inmates jailed for 10 years or better, and we're talking about nonviolent drug offenders. Okay, again, 424-258-9271. Chat room is open. Feel free to leave your comments, questions, and I'll try to read them out over the air. Right now we're going to take a short break. I'm going to see who we got on the line, and we'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
All the ghettos around the world, dig this. Get the bubbleless Joe. Shut
all
it.
The children say. There's a world out there that I wanna see. There's a man that I'm destined to be. I won't be stopped by the ghetto streets. I believe inside that I can't be beat. This life could be a ball and chain if you let yourself get caught in the game. I had some friends who drugs were dope, but I don't intend to go down that road. One day I'm gonna change the world, make a better place for every boy and girl. Everyone in need, homeless families, have a place to sleep and food to eat. I'll take every gun off the street so another tear won't be shed in grief. And every thug in every hood, I will make them change from bad to good.
SOC Radio. I'm your host, Tony Nix. Welcome to tonight's show. We're talking about the pros and cons of clemency for inmates jailed for 10 years or better for nonviolent drug offenses. The Obama administration is encouraging many nonviolent federal prisoners to apply for early release and expecting thousands to take up the offer. It's an effort to deal with high cost and overcrowding in prisons, also a matter of fairness. Our call-in number tonight is 424-258-9271. Press 1, and you'll be joining our conversation. We want to know what's your view, what's your pros, what's your cons. Have you been a have you experienced being locked away for 10 years or better for a nonviolent drug offense? Because that's what we're talking about tonight. I got my co-host, Sister Amunet. She's here with me. We're going to go to the phone lines shortly. Again, 424-258-9271 is the number to call in if you have a view or a comment or even a question or a disagreement. Because on here, it's okay to disagree. Don't be afraid to call in if you disagree. You know, we don't argue. We accept when people disagree. We just don't attack one another. I'm going to go to my phone lines. Cat out of California. You know, he said he doesn't have a lot of time, but I want to get his view on this. And that is Brother Doc Scott. Good evening, Doc. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, hello, you're coming in a little broken up, Doc. Can you hear me? Oh, we got bad reception, Doc. I don't know what happened. Are you moving around or you want to call back in because the reception is bad? I can't hear you. Coming in broken up. You may need to call back in. Okay, now I'm going to go back to the phone line and bring in Brother Roland Thomas. Good evening, Roland. Can you hear me?
Yes, brother. How you doing?
I'm great, man. Hello. Welcome to tonight's discussion.
Yeah, thanks for having me, brother.
Say hello to my co-host, Sister Amunet.
How are you, sister?
I'm very well, thank you. And yourself?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Good.
So let me ask you, Brother Roland, what's your view on the pros and cons of clemency for inmates who've been jailed? You know, let me just say this. You know, if you've been in jail for 10 years or better, you're not an inmate, you're a convict, because there is a difference between inmates and convicts. I'll get to that later. But we're talking about clemency for convicts who've been jailed for 10 years or better for nonviolent drug offenses. What's your view on that, Brother Roland?
Well, as a retired criminal defense investigator in New York for 20 years or better on the federal and state death panels, as well as all of the other drug criminal defense legal panels, I would have to say that I can't see where there are any cons to this particular guideline and policy that Eric Holder and the president are getting ready to sign. If you're spending, well, based on the guidelines, I mean, first of all, they're saying you have to do 10 years. You have to have 10 years in. So that's the first requirement. So unless you were really dealing with some high-profile weight, which resulted in some sort of physical injury, I can't see where 10 years, because a lot of this is crack as opposed to the powder cocaine. And as you know, Holder just successfully also got that knocked down, so you're on somewhat of an equal playing field there. Whereas white folks were walking because of the fact they were dealing with just the cocaine, the powder stuff, and black folks were, you know, being jailed, you know, sometimes for life. So Holder, I commend Holder and the president for looking at this inequity, and I must say, like I just can't see any cons to it, because as of now, we have more black brothers in prison than we had slaves in America in the 1850s. So I'd like to hear somebody that has a problem with what Holder's getting ready to do.
Well, okay. Let me, I have to ask you this. Okay.
Yeah.
We're talking about thousands.
200.
Not a few hundred. Okay. Okay, wow. What are you releasing them to?
Well, you're releasing them to about maybe 30 to 40 years of freedom that they would not necessarily have if they stay where they're at, to start off with.
Okay. Maybe you're misunderstanding me. What do they have to look forward besides freedom when they come? What do they have to look forward to?
Wow. Listen, freedom is the most
precious. We're not going to dismiss their freedom. Of course, freedom is big. But how are you going to live in a society where economically things are bad?
I don't have an answer for that. They're going to live just like any other inmate being released. As long as, Congress, continues to block any and all job efforts, job creations Obama wasn't put forth, they're going to look, they're going to face the same challenges any other inmate being released is going. Is one thing they have in their favor. They will have their freedom.
To me, it's a little more to it. It's a little more to it. First of all, you're coming into a society that you haven't lived in 10 years. A lot has changed in 10 years. We live in a very high-tech society, okay? We're under 24/7 surveillance. Okay, again, the economy is bad. If you're just getting out and you really don't have any kind of skills going on, you're going to probably have to take some kind of menial job. Okay, you may be on parole. Okay, you're going to have to adhere to some rules. And if your mindset is not prepared for that, you're not going to do real good. So, are they getting behavior modification skills while they're away? I'm quite sure maybe some are, but not all.
Well, when you talk about a sister that was just hiding her boyfriend's drugs so that the man couldn't find it, getting 30 years, Tony, what's the other option? You want them to stay in jail until the job?
No, not at all. I wouldn't say for them to stay in jail. I'm looking at the fact that they've been away. What do you have for them when they get out? Everybody doesn't have a family to go to or friends, because most likely if they had any friends, they're probably gone or maybe locked up themselves.
Yeah.
So my thing is, what do you... You're going to release them? Fine, good. Let's release them. All right, let's release them. Fine, I'm all for it. At the same time, have something for them to come home with, to work with. And at least let their mindsets be prepared for what they're stepping out into.
Well, they got to get on the back of the line for that. Because we've got thousands and thousands of inmates that are released every year that are still waiting to get jobs, to get education, and to get a leg up on assimilating back into society. So, I mean, like I said, the standard procedures and institutions and programs that are here are basically like halfway, houses and stuff. And there are certain programs for those that are on probation. Because make no mistake now, this clemency, they still got to watch a lie over you. So it's not like you can get out here and start over, like your record is expunged. They're doing you a solid in terms of actually making a law retroactive. which is the first time that's really ever been done. Laws don't usually get passed and then get made retroactive to those who did not come under that law prior to it being passed. So, like I said, the most precious commodity that they can look at, and like I said, there's like approximately 200,000 that fall within this category, the most precious commodity they have going for them is to have their freedom so that they can make some sort of adjustment some way, somehow, like every other inmate that's, has to deal.
Well, okay. I was just looking at something here, okay? You know, when you're incarcerated, you know, you can catch charges while being incarcerated, okay? You
Absolutely.
Can go in as a nonviolent felon, and the next thing you know, you become very violent while you're incarcerated. And one of the things I see here is you've had to have had a clean record while you were incarcerated.
Absolutely.
Okay. There are things in this, you know, just because, you know, you got busted for a nonviolent drug case, if you had any cases in the penitentiary, you're not getting out.
Right.
You're not getting out, you know.
Right.
I don't know. You know, from what I'm seeing here is there's going to be a lot getting out and there's going to be a lot going back.
Absolutely. The recidivism rate is what it is. As long as we don't have jobs, as long as we don't have education, the recidivism rate is going to be what it is. And then you also have to look at the fact that a lot of these people that are on this within this category also took pleas, man. You know?
Right, exactly. I mentioned that at the top of the show.
Okay, I'm just tuning in, but
I'm just in agreement with what you're saying. I'm in agreement with what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not like they don't have families and stuff, or they're that down and out. Because it could have just been, as I say, a BS tip, and they wanted to get somebody else, so they made them flip by giving them an offer they couldn't refuse.
Well, you may be right on that, Roland.
No, stand by, don't go nowhere.
Okay, don't go anywhere. Okay, Roland. Stand by. Don't go anywhere. I want to go back to the top. I want to go back to the top here. I see the doc is back on the line, and I want to get his view. So, Roland, stand by. Don't go anywhere. Doc, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear. Is that better?
Okay, yes, very much, very much. We can hear you crystal clear. So, Doc, based on what we're talking about here, I mean, you know, what's your view?
Well, I'll try to make it real short. Number one, let's look at it as a system. It's the system. The system hasn't changed, and let's get out of shame and blame. It is what it is. The economy is what it is. The economy affects some people, some folks, a little bit different than it does other folks. That's just the way it is. These folks, we know from research, haven't been getting an education. What are they going to resort to? We don't know. We can probably do a little research, and a number of them are probably going to fall back on some things that they're most comfortable with. Hopefully we can pray and get down on our knees like we usually do, and maybe that'll work, maybe it won't. Recidivism rate, I don't know. Is it going to be high? I don't know. folks do what they are used to doing and get reinforced for. This system is pretty locked in to a certain way of doing things, and people do what they are reinforced for. I'm concerned because you released 200,000 folks that weren't educated to do things a different way, the anger that those folks have, what are they going to do, how are they going to deal with it? I think we're going to be in trouble. That's my perspective on it. And I don't care what color skin they have. You release 200,000 folks that aren't educated, aren't prepared to deal with coming out here in this system. I think we're going to be in deep trouble. Deep trouble. Those are my thoughts on it. We're going to have some real serious issues. And yeah, it's not fair the way this came down. And what do you learn locked up in that system? It's not fair. So I think we're going to be in trouble. That's what I think. That's as short as I can make it. We're in deep, deep, deep trouble trying to make this thing right. And that's what I think.
Well, do you agree with releasing them?
Yeah, I think they should be released. I don't think it was fair. But in the releasing of them, I think the repercussions are going to be astounding. And there's some things that that people need to be looking, should have been looking at a long time ago. You and I have talked about this for a few years now. Look at the gun sales. They have been up for a number of years now.
Yeah,
I've been talking about this
right.
For a number of years now. I'm telling you, it's on the rise. Why do you think people are doing that sort of stuff? Sorry about that. Sorry about that.
Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate in a moment, but first I want to go to my co-host, Sister Amunet. Let her chime in if she chooses to.
Yes. I mean, you know, it's like I said, my view on, you know, the whole criminal justice system is just that it's designed ultimately to fail our people, black and brown. You know, and I just don't think, I'll say it again, this is my position. What is my position? I don't think it'll let us change. I think that it's designed for its purpose. It is the new theory of today. I don't know if necessarily that there are more black men in prison than there were in slavery. I don't know if that number is true. That's a number that happens to be floating around and a theory that happens to be floating around. But, you know, if it can work, it can work. My whole thing is let's deconstruct the whole prison system as it is anyway, because it doesn't rehabilitate. It doesn't get our men back in shape. There's a lot of brothers that are dealing with mental health issues. All right, and that's not taken care of or taken into consideration. You know, you said they become more violent when they're in prison? Probably, you know, but because there's no rehabilitation. There's no program to get the mind right, you know. So, you know, it's just a harsh penalty. They've taken away continuing education programs. They don't have those in place like they used to. You know, so what are we doing? Sending them in just for them to come right back in again? Becomes a revolving door. So that's my, you know, take on the whole system. If something different can come about with the Attorney General, Eric Holder, and, you know, he has a plan in place which can maybe change some things, and for people that don't, that have unjust sentences and unjust penalties against them, I'm all for it. Whatever can work, but let's deconstruct and reconstruct the entire system, because that whole thing needs to be pulled apart and redesigned. And, you know, what is our society? Our society was founded by people that were criminals, ultimately, that came over here with criminal intent. So the very fiber of what this country was built on was corrupt. So corruption breeds corruption. That's what you're going to get.
You know,
so that's
the
thing that was planted with corrupt seeds, and now we have sprouted corruption. You reap what you sow.
I don't know. Call me the conspiracy guy for right now, just for this moment. Okay, I said I was going to be the devil's advocate for a minute. I think there's a hidden agenda in this, because as we're discussing this and the things that we're talking about, okay, issues that people are going to have coming out, issues they're having while they're still incarcerated, you know, how are these things going to be approached? And that is the part I haven't seen anything about. All I'm seeing is fairness for those who were done wrong in the system, the court system, cutting down the population, and they're talking about the high cost. What are you going to do for those who are getting out? That part I don't see. And for me, that is a very crucial part. You're going to release some folk into today's violent, plague society, overrun with propaganda and media scandal, gun violence, joblessness, homelessness. For the life of me, has someone help me out here? Help me out here. 424-258-9271 is the call and number. Press 1. I know you're in the queue. Doc, thank you. If you can hang out, please hang out. But I want to go to my next caller. This is a sister who's always discussing things of this nature, our children, education, and the betterment for people of color. And without delay, let me bring in this sister, and this is Sister Hafisa. Can you hear me, sister? Good evening.
Good evening. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Loud and clear. Welcome to tonight's discussion. Say hello to my co-host, Sister Amunet.
Good evening, sister.
Good evening. How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful. And thank both of you for having the dialogue. Thank you, Brother Tony, for inviting me.
Oh, you're most welcome.
Yes, sir. I want to be brief. Because I do want to listen to the others. I listened for a short time, I think, on your most recent dialogue, and there was some discussion about, and I heard the sister say again tonight about the data that is floating around about more black males in prison and so forth. Let me invite you to Google Dr. Ivory Tolson. Dr. Ivory Tolson is an associate professor at Howard University, and he is the deputy director of the White House Initiative on Historically Black Colleges and Universities. He was here in Atlanta, Georgia, the last of March at a Black Male Summit, and I was able to listen to him as well as have some a personal conversation, and he has the truth about those figures, and know the thought that there are more black males in prison than in college is not correct. But I just want to, you know, invite others to get that information for themselves. So Dr. Ivory Tolson. Tolson, T-O-L-D-S-O-N, if you will Google him, and he's an associate professor at Howard University. My comments in terms of your subject tonight is basically, you know, I'm going to be very straightforward. I believe that African Americans, for the most part, we're looking for ways to escape. We're looking for excuses. We wanted to know what was the president going to do, what is he doing for black people, what he announced. My brother's keeper, for the life of me, a book that I heard scream about, well, that's not going to work, and, well, you know, it's going to take more money. Now he's saying, okay, he's going to make this situation try to happen. Unless we believe differently, we know that the majority or a large number of those persons that could be affected or helped are persons of color. Now we're talking about, well, I don't know, well, what about, well, are they going to come back into the system? The point that I'm making is this. Do we really like each other? And I have come to the conclusion we really don't like black males. We really don't like each other. You know, we just talk that noise. Because if we are really sincere, you know, many of those individuals who are in, and I'm not saying all, but many of them, we know that they have been given harsh sentences during the drug war and all that kind of stuff. So this is an opportunity to try to, you know, at least be fair, unless we've forgotten what that means. But now we act like we're afraid of those same individuals. And you know what? What about the state that we say we have? What about the churches that are on every corner? What about all of these programs, you see, that we have robbed of the money, but really we know we haven't done the job of helping? So there's nothing in the community now, in our communities. We know, yes, we're afraid that our own brothers and sisters are going to come back and live next door to us because we haven't done our job. So, you know, I applaud the president, I do, and I think his initiative, the Black Male Initiative, and Black and My Brother's Keeper, this is all. This is what that's all about. It's really not all. It's not about the president being in every state and every corner trying to make things happen. That's our job, but we won't step up and do it. So you know what? Much of what people are saying might be the case. Because we aren't making anything different happen. Our children, and we know many of these will be our children, and our children aren't happy at all. The so-called leadership that we have not given. And you're right, you might want to be a little afraid because, you know, they're upset. They're angry. And so, and it's from the education front, it's not looking any better anytime soon. So we might want to check ourselves and ask ourselves, do we really like each other? Do we really love black males? Or do we just want to cry when, you know, one has been gunned down by a white person or whatever, a march when that happens? You know, why aren't we out here now? You know, why are we silent? Why aren't we doing what we need to do to make sure that these young people come back and they can come back into our neighborhoods where something is going on? Other than the same thing that was going on when they went in. Many of them are there because there was nothing going on. That's my thought.
Well, sister, wow, you said a lot there. And right now I'm going to go woman to woman and let Sister Amunet give her view on that. Because, wow, you said a lot. You know, I have to agree with most of it, you know, because... You're saying young folk are going to be coming home, but also it's going to be old folk coming home too. You know, some people that were incarcerated, they weren't all young. They weren't all young. The bottom line is, I get what you're saying. Like, what do we as a people have for them instead of putting it on what the government or the president should have in place for them? And I get that part. I think that's a very valid point. Very valid point. Yeah. What do we got to offer them when they come home as a people? and I have to agree, we don't have much. We don't have much because they're going to need some help, especially with that mindset, critical thinking skills. See, I used to be a behavior modification counselor in state prisons here in New York. And my clients, my case codes, were all 10 years or better. And they didn't have a clue on how to step out here in society and make it happen. They have to change their mindset. And as Sister Amunet said momentarily ago about how many programs have been cut, okay, education-wise, and mental health issues, you know, those things being addressed, probably not. Probably not. So, you know, people of color, we don't have a whole lot to offer. We have some. We have some, you know, some. There's some programs that can offer certain things, but we need more. We need more. And I agree with what you said. You know, we have to take some responsibility in helping those who are going to be released in society. So I agree with you 100%.
Brother Tony, let me just say this. It seems like we always go to programs. And you know what? What about a little love? And I'm not being facetious, but see, the problem with all of the programs that we've had that have not worked is because, you know what? The people, they didn't have any love for anybody. It was all about those little measly dollars. And, you know, I mean, just love. You know, if it were I'm not talking to you personally or the sister or anybody else, but if it were your family, you know, do you love them? Can you really say you love someone that's not even of your same blood line? Because what? They're human. I'm just saying we can have all the problems we want. We got to love each other. We got to love each other, and we don't. We don't. We might as well just face it. We really don't. And without that, no, I'm sure others probably don't want to have that happen. And I'm not being facetious. You just asked me my view, and I told you.
No, I'm not taking it as you being facetious. Again, I agree, because a lot of programs, it is about the money, okay, and some that work in these programs give that personal touch. I know I did when I was a counselor, you know, and I was, you know, I'm not bragging. I was very successful because I gave it that personal touch. I sat back and I cried with my caseload. Okay. I identified with the pain, even though I hadn't been incarcerated like they were, you know, It takes certain skills, and everybody don't have that. Everyone don't have that. So we have what you're talking about. You know, it's not about trying to be personally involved with someone. It's about doing a job. If they get it, they get it. If they don't, they don't. This is what has happened with the long-term drug programs. Before, it was in the beginning when the long-term programs came out, it was more personal. But what I believe happened, and this is just my view, the success rate was very, very small. So it turned into, okay, if you don't get it, you just don't get it, okay? If we'll always have a bed available if you don't get it for someone else. And that's basically what it has come down to, you know. This thing is not easy. It is not, because people don't get that personal with their clients. It's a job. You're in there as a professional. But sometimes what helps is if you have folks working in them programs who have come through the muck and the mire and the hell, and have learned to live in society, okay, and be productive, that is the best experience that you can give folks that are coming home. You can have all the degrees in the world. But if you can't ID with that mindset of what they're dealing with, you're not going to have a very successful rate with your client. That is my experience. That is my experience. So, you know, we got to work with what we got. Let's say that. We still have to work with what we have. Because they're going to need some help when they come home. And, you know, you mentioned our brother's initiative, our brother's keepers initiative that President Obama launched. You know, he said that we have, there's a part we have to do. And when he said that, folks were talking about, oh, why is it our responsibility? Well, why not? That was my whole thing. Why not? You know, what are you? It can't happen without our responsibility, without us reaching out. So you know, and when it comes to criticism, who criticizes first? It's always us. It's always us, and I don't know. I've been looking at a few things, and since the beginning of the year, the president has become an action president, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things he's implementing are focused on people of color, which as the president, you know, black or white, if you see a certain part of your society, your nation, is suffering, I believe you're supposed to address it, and that's what he's doing now. So I don't really think this is so much a race issue, even though it is. You know, I'm looking at what he's doing and how he's addressing things, and he knows what needs to be addressed, and there's no more time to wait to do it. He has to do it now, because probably once he steps out of office, there's nobody going to address any of these things. I don't believe so. That's just my view. Let me go back to the phone line here and bring brother. Don't go anywhere, Sister Hafisa. Let me go back to Brother Roland and get his view here. Brother Roland, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, brother.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I just want to let everybody refer to Sister Ohio State University law professor and civil rights activist Michelle Alexander. She's the one that published the book, The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in the Age of Colorblindness. And she opens up the book by stating that more black men are behind bars or under the watch of the criminal justice system than were enslaved in 1850. So if anyone wants to Google that, for some specific implicit facts, they may do so. The second point I want to make is that, I don't know, I'm getting a feeling that everybody thinks that this is going to be like a massive dumping or opening up of floodgates of the prisons like Castro did in his prisons and just filled the boats and just sent them all, you know, over to America. Each and every applicant that's applying for this clemency, man, it's going to take months. For some, it may take years for it to go through that legal process. So you're talking about approximately 200,000, according to Professor Alexander. I mean, there were more than 864,000 black men were incarcerated in 2008. So, you know, if you're talking 200,000 over a period of 3 to 5 years, it's not just going to be stick the key in and let them all out, you know. There's a whole process and guidelines, and, you know. They'll be able to assimilate back into the neighborhoods without it being an overflow or overrun throughout this, you know, the 50 states of America.
Well, you know, you're probably right. Okay, I don't really know, but I know what Obama's going in 2016, okay? So they got to start the process now, because whoever comes into office you know, could change the policy or change it. So they got to do it now. Now is the time. You know, at the same time, I keep going back there. You have to have something for them to come home to. And yes, there's going to be all kind of guidelines, you know, but at the same time, you know, we're talking about some mindsets that they haven't been in society for quite some time. Okay, and stepping out into the world after 10 years is like stepping on another planet because a lot has changed in 10 years. And if
not,
you don't have...
You don't know.
Hold on. If you don't have...
Go ahead.
You don't have family support or anyone and you just stepping out there on your own, it's tough. It's really tough if you don't have anyone to help you along the way, especially family. Now, the sister Hafisa, you know, she was talking about what we have to offer them as a people to welcome them home to. And, you know, she was saying leading with love because they're going to need that because regular society is not welcoming them back. They're looking at them as felons, okay? They're going to apply for jobs. Have you been convicted of XYZ during XYZ? Yes or no? They're going to have some obstacles out there, some big obstacles. Those that may have mental health issues. This is not going to be an easy transition for those that are going to come in back into society. By no means will it be an easy transition. And there's going to be frustration. There's going to be death. And there's going to be folks going back. Going back, and believe it or not, this may sound crazy, but they're probably going to want to go back to what's familiar. And prison is familiar. Society isn't.
I don't know. I
know
I
that
know
sounds
I can,
crazy. I know that sounds
know
crazy,
I,
but it's a reality.
Tony, I would venture to say, I would venture to say that, you know, prison is a subculture. There's very little in prison that goes on in prison that doesn't actually happen outside behind, out here on the street, fam. So in terms of the Shawshank Redemption and them being institutionalized, whereas, listen, they got computers in prison. They got every drug on the street in prison. They got, listen, brothels in prison, liquor stores in prison, everything that's in the, on the outside they got on the inside. So it's not that much of a conversion, man, transition.
Well, I think they're rich. I think they're rich. You know why? You know why? Because when, hold up. See, when you get out, okay, there's no CO talking about on the count. Okay, there's no doors clanking and keys turning. There's a difference. There's a difference. Okay?
I get
what you're saying. Wait a minute. I get what you're saying about what folks have access to in prison. But there is a difference between being locked up and not being locked up. Now,
yeah,
you freedom. Come out into society, you come into society with a mindset like you still locked up, you're going to fail. You're going to fail. This is what I'm talking about. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come right back.
Save the children. We gotta pray.
Confidence in the victory of good over Eve. Bless.
Your presence around us with love, and we must all agree that it's time to stop pretending we cannot see. And if we all should close our eyes, we would never recognize the difference between the touch of a black or a white hand. So why is there all the fighting across the land? To all the people of the world, let's be friends.
Violence, read a book and read both to history. Try solve the mystery of Willie Lynch and the others, how they enslaved the mind of their mothers. Tell us that your word is found in your color, but they never told us we were brothers. Brothers and sisters, all the people of the world, let's be straight. Tell all the boys and girls, let's be straight. Yeah,
you're calling him, that he hears
us just the same. The
message
will fight, let us unite, let's be
brave. How do we view this world religion? Is this really worth the killing? I don't really know, my thoughts differ. How do we want this world to be? Is this our legacy? Poor bodies turning in them graves because of how we behave. They tried to set us free, but we're still slaves. To all the people of the world, let's be straight. Tell all who's never heard, let's be straight. Now care how you're calling near, to hear us just the same. Now make them divide, let us tonight, let's be straight.
Your presence around us with love, and we must all agree that it's time we stop pretending we cannot see.
If we all should close our eyes, we would never recognize the difference between the touch of a black or a white hand. So why is there all this fighting across the land?
To all the people of the world, let's be straight.
Peace reign. That's Brother Taurus Riley, one of my favorite reggae singers. Tonight, we're talking about pros and cons of clemency for convicts jailed for 10 years or better for nonviolent drug offenses. I'm your host, Tony Nix. and my co-host who's along with me, Sister Amunet. So far, it's been a pretty good discussion here. We're trying to find out, will this work? Will folks get out and live productive lives? How will they do it?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to help them? We didn't even mention about those who have been institutionalized their entire lives. So we're going to get back to our conversation in just a moment, but our call-in number is 424-258-9271. Press 1. You can join us in on tonight's conversation. We got about 15 minutes left. So if you're calling in, now is the time. I'd like to hear your view or your opinion or even your experience. The chat room is open. I see a few folks are in the chat room. Feel free to say your name, you know, write your name in so I'll know who you are, give you a shout-out if you got any questions, or if you have a comment, feel free to type it in, and I'll read it over the air. Again, our call-in number is 424-258-9271. Press 1. I'll know you're in the queue, and I'll bring you in on tonight's discussion. I'm going to go back to the phone lines because this sister, I mean, she really came with a big point, and I just can't get away from that point, so I want to go back to her, and that is Sister Hafisa. Sister Hafisa, can you hear me?
I can hear you, brother. I just want to suggest this to the audience. I just want to suggest this, and it will give us something, you know, some thought. Just today or maybe yesterday, I don't know, what, you know, perhaps when your news service brought it across the wire, but in 2017, there's going to be a high school in Chicago named after President Obama.
Yes, I heard that today. Yeah.
Okay. Now, really, everything we're talking about is really about is education or the lack thereof. Even for the ones who you're saying are going to come out and they've been there so long and obviously they aren't going to be school age, you see, education or the lack thereof is what this is all about. So perhaps we might want to put our focus on, you know, trying to establish more institutions of education that we operate, because these individuals that you're talking about, I'm certain that they have children and grandchildren, and so we need to make sure that they don't go through that cycle. And that might give those who are coming out some incentive, you know, to see it a little differently. And I just want to suggest that anybody who says we don't have the funds to do that, I mean African-American people, I'm just going to say that is not the case. Now, we may have African-American people who don't want to invest in our people's education, but I can promise you we have the funds to do that. So that's just a thought, is that we begin to put our focus where it really makes a difference. And that in, I didn't say the educational system as we know it. I said in an educational system that we build and we operate.
Well, we're talking,
sense.
You're talking. Go ahead, sister. I'll wait. Go ahead.
I was going to say, no, that makes sense. That's it. That's it. I mean, it's logical and it's sound. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Making it happen. That's the area, you know, because, again, yes, I agree. We have the resources and assets to make it happen, investing in their own. We are the biggest consumers. Okay, we are the biggest consumers in the nation, and what do we have? What do we have? Those in power are in power because of the money we spend with them. When do we empower ourselves? When do we wake up to the fact that we're holding a big piece of the power in this country, and it's in the dollar bill? We buy everything. We buy stuff we can't afford all the time. Somebody's buying something right now, a person of color. They know they can't afford it. They know they don't need it, but they want it. So we got to get some priorities going on with our wants and our needs in order to empower ourselves to build institutions like Sister Hafisa is talking about. Now, that's a tall order. That is a tall order. So we got to want to help each other, and that is an area that we're not doing very well in. Would you agree with that, Sister Hafisa?
I'm positive. You're right. You are right on it. You are right. It's just whether or not we want to do it. It's all about, again, the heart. We can want to do it, and it can happen, or we can talk about it, and it won't.
Well, let me ask you.
Mm-hmm.
How do we change that? How do we change that? How do we make it imperative? Let me throw that word out there.
You know, I don't want to continue. I don't want to sound just repetitive and sound like this is so simple. But I think, let me put it this way. I thank Almighty God that He has blessed me with a heart for my people. I mean a heart. And brother, I can't tell you any more than that. Now, how do you make that happen? Let me tell you how it happened for me. I can just put that. I can tell you that. I just,
okay.
You know what, around, and I said, you know what, I'm a special person. God has helped me through adversity and all kinds of things. And I'm here for a reason.
Yeah.
And I took that positive thought, and I said, so if I'm here for a reason, I must be. You know what? Let me make it happen. And so I'm moving out on it. And that's, I can't say how it makes, how it will work for others. But I'm willing to work with anybody who has a heart. I can tell you that. I'm ready to go to work with anybody who has the heart. Not the talk, but the walk. We can talk as we walk, but we got to do both.
Right.
And we have to do
them
as fast, quick, and in a hurry.
That's right.
Absolutely.
I mean, we can't talk. We can't keep talking and talking. There has to be some sort of, you got to have, you know, what is the fruit of your labor? What is the fruit? Where's your fruit? Where's the work? And the works have to be made manifest. And even Christ, if you want to get into the whole biblical thing, you know, says you know a person by their fruit. You know a tree by their fruit. And
yes.
We have to produce the fruit. We got to produce the fruit.
You're right. You are so right, sister.
Yeah. So that's
just
what I
have.
Personally. Personally, I want to see that too. I want to see that, Sister Hafisa. I want to see it manifest. I want to see our works going forth. Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Well, I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, sister, and I will do anything I can to work with you.
Okay. Definitely.
Yes.
And I thank you.
You're welcome. And I thank you.
And you know what, you said it takes a certain kind of heart. You know, you got to love people. You got to love people. You know, you said that, you know, there's a purpose and a reason, and you've come to realize what your purpose is. You know, and wow, you know, I can definitely ID with that because, you know, I come from that other side. You know, I come from that other side, and, you know, I come through it by grace and mercy. Okay, I watch a lot of people die. Some are incarcerated, never getting out. And by grace and mercy, okay, I come through all of that fire, you know, in pretty good shape. And it took me one day to say, wait a minute. How did I get through and all these other folks didn't get through? What's going on? You know, as I said, I worked in the state penitentiary. And when I went in there, I didn't go in there with no degrees or experience. I went in there, only experience I had was my life experience grace and mercy. And I went in there, and God helped me make it happen.
I ran
the behavior modification groups. I ran the anger management groups. Ran groups on the two-letter word no. Because I let them know when they hit the pavement, there's going to be a lot of no.
Uh-huh.
No, you can't work here. No, you can't live here. Uh-huh. Your parole officer saying, no, you can't go there.
Uh-huh.
Learning to deal with the word no. That little two-letter word can do some damage to a mindset that is not experienced with accepting no. No is part of life. It's part of life. So, you know, I believe they should be equipped with that before they come out, but unfortunately, most are not. So
right.
It's back on us again. Back on us having something available, having workshops that they can attend. You know, this is a tall order. And there's a lot of us, Sister Hafisa. You know, we're scattered, you know, but there's a lot of us. There's a lot of us in trying to promote what we need to do. That's a task in itself because people want to be so individual. Well, you know, I got this. Can we get on one agenda? Can we just get on one agenda? We can align and get on one agenda and make it happen. But we're too selfish. We're complicated for no reason other than we're self-centered. That's all.
And in my mind, that doesn't have to, for those who think, well, you know what, I'm doing this and I think this is good, and why do I have to just do what you do? In no way, shape, form, or fashion do I think getting on one agenda means that we all have to be doing the same thing. I'm just saying I think we all have to want the same thing, and we have to ask ourselves, do we want that? Do we want for our brother what we want for ourselves? Do we really want that? And once we get to that point, then, you know, yes, there are going to have to be multiple ways of getting it done because we have so much that we have to do. We don't have time for everybody to just do it one way. And it's not just a one-way thing. But we have to get to the point of, do I love my brothers and my sisters? Do I really do?
Well, you know, we're talking about placement, job placement. You know, they're going to need services. They're going to need a lot of services.
Yeah.
And if you're not getting a job, then you're going to have to go get on public assistance.
Yep. And it's a
cycle. Not really. Because guess what? We've got skills, man. Our people got skills. There was a young brother came to my door 2 days ago. He wanted to cut my yard. You know what I did? I invited him into my home. This was a student, you know. But I invited him in and I said, listen, I want you to, and I kind of laid it out for him because I saw my boys in him when they were his age. But I said, you know what? What I want you to do is I want you to think about how much this will cost. Give me your plan for how you're going to get all this done. And I want you to go back and I want you to talk to mom and dad because I want them to help you understand if you are making, you know, a just decision in terms of price for you and yourself. And then let's come back and talk about it. Even bring them and make sure that they see the job and that they, you know, can. And I mean, you know what, I could have just said, yeah, cut my yard. But it wasn't about that. If he just walked up to my door and knocked on my door, he had a rake. asked him, did he have a lawnmower? And that tells the joint. But, you know, he kind of didn't have a plan, asking if he had flyers or anything. So we have to help our children know. We have to help them know how to do this. It's going to be long and tedious. It is.
Well, we're talking about people getting out of prison. Okay?
I understand.
We're talking, all right, okay, I get what you're saying. We're talking about folks that's coming out who's been away for 10 years. Okay?
Okay.
Some going to know how to be humble. Some going to know how to be humble, but most are not. Okay? Because cutting grass and things of that nature is a very humbling job. Okay? And a lot, some don't want the fast fix. Okay? This other stuff ain't working. This other stuff ain't working. I'm going the way that I'm familiar with. But at the same time, see, them corners that they might have been running, some young cat is running that corner now, okay? You better not walk up on that corner thinking you holding it down because that's over unless you were just that big.
Haven't they been doing it in prison for free? Haven't they been doing it inside for free? Huh?
Well, hold on. In prison, you're forced to do it. You know, that's how you get what is that you get when you're buying stuff? I can't think of the name of it at the moment. Okay, that's how you get. But now you out in the world. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Now you out in the world. They're not practicing that kind of humility out in the world. See, what we got to do is reach back and stop looking back.
Okay.
We got to, in that love thing, we got to let them know we understand.
Mm-hmm.
We understand, and at the same time, you know, we got to give. We're going to have to give some tough love also and let them know, listen, if you don't do X, Y, Z, you're going to wind up going back to prison or to the graveyard. Because these young boys out here are not playing. These young boys out here are not playing. Okay? They will kill you just so they got a rep for killing you. And you just came home, and now you back around the way. You know, what's good? What's good? We holding it down, not you. Not you. And if you're not gang affiliated or whatever the case may be, forget about it. Forget about it. Public assistance, okay, then you got to watch out for, you know, the addictions of drugs, drinking. And for men, one of the biggest traps for men is the opposite sex. That's the biggest guys. I've dealt with men in the penitentiary who've had solid plans upon release, but before the left foot catches up with the right foot, that plan has changed into sex. Then I'll do what I gotta do. And if you don't have somebody waiting for you, you're going for the quick fix. You're going for the quick fix, and that trap leads them back every time, without failing.
Well, brother, let me say this. You know what? There's something. See, what you're talking about, you're better prepared to, and you're better prepared to meet that mindset and make it happen. But you know, on that thing of women, you know, we have to have strong women to have strong men. So perhaps, you know, the sister there. What's your name again, sister?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, perhaps the sister and I can tackle our sisters, our women, because, again, a strong woman will make a strong man. And so, again, I say it's not going to be easy, but, you know, I'm willing to do it.
I'm grateful for your willingness in what you do, because I know you in it. I know you in it, Sister Hafiz. I know that. Okay, no doubt in my mind. You know, men come home. If you don't have a good woman waiting for you to come home, see, in today's society, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, you just came home from jail. Okay. You've been away for 10 years. Okay. You ain't had a woman. Have you had a man? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, come on, y'all. Let's be real with it. Let's be real with it. And in today's society, what do you, well, I've heard that, you know, either half the men are in prison or the other half is gay. You know, come, you don't think they're going to be having to come up against that? I'm saying these are some of the issues. I'm not saying that nobody can get out and can't make it, but this is a tough mountain to climb if you're coming out and you're not prepared for today's society. Because today's society is off the chain. Sex and violence. Sex and violence. And nobody wants to, we won't help each other. We are the only people that won't do it. Oh, I don't have time. I got too much other stuff going on in my life. Listen, you know, they made their bed. You know, that kind of stuff. That kind of stuff.
Well, yeah.
This is, we are our own worst problem. You know, we always want to get off into race and this and that. Yeah, that is in there. Racism is in there, no doubt. At the same time, we're not doing enough. We're just not doing enough. We're not doing enough because we can do more. We can do so much more. If we make the decision that we want more, if we want more, we can have more because we got the assets and we got the resources and we got the dollar. We're the biggest spenders. We are the biggest spend. If we say we're only getting what we need and stop buying what we want, we'll level the playing field in a lot of areas.
That's right.
In a lot of areas. But we're not taking that initiative. I mean, does anybody disagree or agree with me? Let me bring Brother Roland back in because I got his mic on mute. Let's see if I can get him in. Okay. Brother Roland, you still there?
Yeah, brother. Yeah. I'm listening to you. The word you were looking for was commissary.
There you go. Thank you. Thank you. That's exactly the word I was looking for.
Just to let you know, I was listening now.
Right. Well, I hope so.
Yeah. Let me just leave you with this here, man, my last point. I totally agree with what you were saying, man. The challenge is definitely, definitely out there. But I say to you this. Each and every day in America, thousands of inmates have reached their 10th year and are being released. Each and every day, someone has reached their 10th year and are being released in this country from prison.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that Eric Holder and President Obama decided to put the prison system under a microscope and find the category where there was the most injustice, which specifically was drugs, that doesn't make everything brand new. The society has to, you know, gear up for this, like I say, for this over swarm of people that are just going to be released from prison all in one swoop. So, you know, everything, every challenge that you describe and every program that you say is needed is not needed specifically just for these 200,000. It's been needed before, and it's needed now for all those thousands that are reaching their 10th day as of tomorrow, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day. So I'll just leave it with that, man. And I think you had a good program.
Well, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Brother Roland. Come join us again anytime. You're always welcome here, you know. And thank you for your points that you made tonight.
Okay,
we'll be back on. Oh, you're going to listen. Okay, don't go anywhere. I got another caller on the line. I'm going to see who it is. In the meantime, Sister Harmonet, can you hold me down while I see who the caller is on the line?
Sure. Yeah, but, I mean, interesting points that have been made this evening. I'm waiting for the day. I'm waiting for the day, you know, when we can see a significant change in within the walls of our criminal justice. Hello?
I'm still here.
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can. Now I can. Okay. I was just saying legislature, you know, has to be advised, and we the people can come together and push legislature to make the changes necessary, be it with the Attorney General, whoever's leading the fight and the plight, you know, but what can we do ultimately to make sure that the entire infrastructure is reformed?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Or anybody. You
exactly.
Know,
you're right. It needs to be reformed. If you're going to make decisions like is being made to release folks, then the system, the prison system needs to be reformed. At the same time, we're not heading in that direction.
Right.
At all. Not with corporate corrections doing what they're doing. At least I don't see it. I could be wrong. Okay, I don't know everything, but that's just what I do know. Let me say that. Going to go to the phone lines. Got another caller, and that is Brother James. Can you hear me, Brother? James?
Yes.
Yeah, can you hear me? You're on the air.
All right. Hello?
Yeah. So what's your view on tonight's topic? We're talking about the pros and cons of clemency for convicts who were jailed for 10 years for nonviolent drug offenses. What's your view on that?
My view is they should, if they did their time, they should get out. When they finish their time, they should get out on time.
Okay.
I had trouble hearing him. What did he just say?
Say it again, James.
If they do their time, they should get out on time.
Okay. If they do their time, they should get out on time?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that's true. And do you think that they're being held back unnecessarily? Do you think that, okay, let's say the time is done and they were given a certain sentence, but the penalty was too harsh at the time of sentencing, and then they're able to get some leniency?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that?
I think of that they feel, let them back out on the street, they're going to get back in trouble, or they're going to do the same thing over and over.
Okay.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. That's harsh. Yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, does prison really rehabilitate? That's my question.
Mm-hmm.
Does prison rehabilitate? Does prison create inner change, psychological change, spiritual change? Does it treat mental illness? Does it reform behavior? Is it a behavior shaping system? Do people conform? Are they reformed or are they transformed or neither?
Mm-hmm.
That's
they
the
should,
question?
Yeah, that's correct. They should be also getting some things in place about doing their time and what they feel that the jail is the pipeline to keep people in jail.
Yeah.
Mm.
Okay,
well, Brother James, thank you for calling in. We're going to close the show. I want to get a final comment from Sister Hafisa and my co-host. But thank you for calling in. Sister Hafisa, your final comments.
Call me when you're ready.
I like that.
That's from the heart. Always from the call me when you're ready.
Short and sweet. It's to the point. Okay. Mm-hmm. Without a doubt, we will be calling you. Please keep posting your conference calls, because I know you've been having some good ones. It's just has been the times has been clashing with when I do the show on Sunday. But please keep putting them out there, because we definitely need the dialogue. Okay, it's about solutions.
Yes.
It's about making it happen. Action now, not tomorrow.
Yes, sir. Okay. And thank you so much, Sister, for meeting us. Sister, spell your name so I know that I'm right.
A-M-U-N-E-T.
And pronounce it again. I'm an elementary teacher, and you have to break it down.
That's okay. That's fine. Immunet. That's like saying immunet.
Immunet. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. So good to meet you.
Likewise, Sadafi. So thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Pleasure having you all with us tonight, Sister Hafisa. We'll be in touch.
Oh,
you stay blessed.
Yes, sir.
Okay?
Yes, sir.
Have a blessed night.
It was my pleasure. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay, Sister Aminet, final comment.
Yeah, I mean, I've said what I needed to say. You know, the whole thing needs to be reformed. It needs to be looked at from the inside out, pulled apart. People are not getting rehabilitated. Basically, if this plan of action can go forward, then I say that that's excellent and fabulous, and hopefully it will. And, you know, there needs to be more reform in terms of how the prison system is set up and our criminal justice system is set up. It needs to be totally reformed. It needs to be a total reformation of how our institutions are set up, because they're not helping anybody. It's just a revolving door repopulating over and over and over and over again. That's it. Those are my final thoughts. I hope it works.
Thank you very much. You know, I would like to see those who've been incarcerated who were given very long sentences for very small amounts of crack cocaine, I would like to see them released. At the same time, I would hope that there would be something in place for those that are released. You know, we don't want them to go back. They don't want to go back, hopefully, you know. So, you know, we have to help provide something for them to come home to. You know, put a plan together and put that plan into action, because they're going to need help. They're going to need help, especially those who, because see, they said for at least 10 years. So, you know, you're going to have those that's been away for 25 years, 20 years.
Right.
You know, it's not just 10 years. You have had to be incarcerated for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we're talking 10 years or better.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've been away maybe 25 years, most likely you was doing time in one of these gladiator schools. That's what I call them, gladiator schools. Okay, that's what I call them. Okay, that's why there's a difference between inmate and convict. See, inmate is your local jail, Rackers
right.
Island or whatever. Okay, once gladiator school is when you're way up there, you're chopping down trees and
that's right.
What have you. Okay, those are the gladiator schools.
In the South, it's the chain gang. In the South, it's the chain gang. You know,
exactly.
I don't know, I think they stopped it in some places, but it still goes on.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, I can remember
mm-hmm.
that as a kid down in Georgia
mm-hmm.
watching this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, oh, this is real life. This ain't a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm with the clemency. I'm with the clemency. At the same time, those that are going to be released, they're going to need some help. You know, Roland said, okay, that people are being released every day. This just didn't start, and I get it. But let's look at the success rate.
Right.
Nobody brought those statistics up. Let's look at the success rate. Now, I do know folks who have gotten out and are very successful. But I know if you have a room of 30 convicts, only 5 of those convicts are going to be successful. Where are you getting that from? Been there. I know from experience. So if we want more to be successful, there's some things we got to put in place, especially in today's society, because the debt is stacked against them.
It is.
And the system is designed for them to fail. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Are we going to lock our doors and hide? Oh, they're letting them out. You know, no, we can't do that. We got to be able to welcome them home with open arms and have something to offer them to help them become productive members of society.
Exactly.
Yes. And then that's pretty much my spiel on it for now, you know. Anyone that's been listening, you've been listening to EIESOC Radio. I'm your host, Tony Nix, along with my co-host, Sister Omnianette. I want to thank everyone who called in and those that were listening. We'll be back on the air 8 p.m. Sunday. What we're coming with is I'll give you a brief of what we're going to be talking about. I got a call from a young brother today, and he wants to discuss changing the rules on the block. So tune in with us on Sunday. This is what we're going to be talking about. In the meantime, our kids are killing each other every day. They're committing genocide by way of homicide. Guns are being flooded into our communities, and we're not doing enough about it. Time to get involved. Time to make a stand. Time to say no. Time to empower ourselves to save our children, because it's truly up to us. Nobody else is going to make it happen. This plague is in every urban community in the nation. Gun violence. Chicago, we need to pray. Over the holiday weekend, the homicide rate way over the top, and it's not stopping. They're talking about bringing in the feds. Okay, what's next? The National Guard? And if they bring them there, they're going to be in a community near you real soon. So it is time for us to get involved. We need a mass action. Our children don't have to die senselessly. And we're not doing enough. I say enough is enough. And it is time to save our children. So get involved. If you want to become part of Enough is Enough, Save Our Children, you can find us on Facebook, or you can go directly to our website, and that is www.enoughisenoughsaveourchildren.org. Email is eie.saveourchildren@gmail.com. If you go to the website, registration is free. Please make a small donation, because we need money to make it happen. Can't make things happen without money. So whatever you can spare, please make a small donation. That help does things like keep this show on the air. Help us rent space for workshops. We got a wish fund to put a few youngsters through school. We can do this, because this is a we thing, not a me thing. Our calling number is 347-827-4084. Excuse me, 829-4084. If you need to contact us by phone, but you can contact us by phone, you can email us, or you can go to the website, as I said, and register and make a small donation. You can also find us on Twitter, EIESOC. And Sister Almunette, as you suggested the other day, we do have a YouTube channel. So please, it is time to get involved. Whatever state you live in, it is time to get involved, and especially if you're in Chicago. Because kids are dying in Chicago as we speak. Let's make it happen, because the sooner we have no violence, the sooner we will know peace. That is KNOW Deuces. Y'all stay blessed. See you 8 p.m. Sunday night.
Hey.